The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, so it is. Welcome, welcome, welcome to a, what day is today? Thursday. It's Thursday. here we are. Sorry I wasn't here yesterday. I just needed a day off. Every once in a while, you need a day off. And then stuff happens. So, anyway, here we are. Busy day. In case you are wondering, the House of Representatives is not in session today. No, they were supposed to be. But Donald Trump's friends had other plans. You know, today is March 4th. And apparently, back in the early days of this union, March 4th was the original inauguration day. Now, after a few years of this, I think they realized the gap between the election and the inauguration was just too long. So inauguration was moved to January 20th. But these brain surgeons who are, students of the QAnon School of Philosophy, they've decided that today, because March 4th was the original inaugural day, that today, why did YouTube not? Oh, there we go. All right, YouTube is going. That today is the day that Donald Trump will be inaugurated for the second time. I don't get. If you're trying to get any of what QAnon people believe or say to make sense, therein lies the problem. It can't make sense because it doesn't make sense. So here we are. Anyway, as far as I know, there's been no shenanigans at the Capitol today, although the House adjourned last night and they're gone for the weekend now. The Senate decided to stay in session. And so they are working right now. And let me tell you what happened a few minutes ago. You know, they are the House earlier in the week, actually yesterday. Was it yesterday? No, it was earlier in the week. Passed the American Rescue Plan. That's the name, the official name of the bill of the big $1.9 trillion COVID relief legislation. The House passed it. They kept in the $15 an hour minimum wage provision, knowing that the Senate would take it out. So once the Senate passes it, they're going to have to send it back to the House, who will approve whatever the Senate sends to them and then send it on to the president for his signature. OK, so that's going on. So just a little while ago, like within the last hour, the Senate voted to. It's a cloture vote. It's a procedural vote to open debate, basically to move forward with the bill so that they can debate it, right? Open debate. They have to do these cloture votes to open debate, to close debate, to vote, to end, to discuss the possibility of ending debate. I mean, the rules in the Senate are so arcane and ridiculous, but this is what they have. So they took the vote. And, well, Kamala Harris was necessary to appear as her in her role as the vice president. Let me back up because that didn't come out right. The vice president has a role in the Senate as Senate president. And the Senate president comes into play when there's a tie in the House. And the vote on this to proceed, the motion to proceed to open debate on the American Rescue Act, well, it was tied 50-50. So here's what happened.
On this vote, the yeas are 50, the nays are 50. The Senate being equally divided, the vice president votes in the affirmative, and the motion to proceed is agreed to.
So that's it. So Kamala Harris is presiding over the Senate while this is going on. So gets to that point. And what normally happens in the Senate, they say, OK, we will let's ask for unanimous consent to dispense with the reading of the bill. 99.9% of the time, That's what happens. That 1/10 of a percentage point, you know, the one time that somebody objects, it's usually an asshole like, Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. So this happened.
Mr. President, Madam President.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam President, I ask consent to dispense with the reading.
Which is what usually happens.
Madam President.
Senator from Wisconsin.
Reserving the right to object. One thing that
Is there an objection?
They don't even know what they're doing.
I object.
So
the objection is heard. The clerk will continue the reading.
So what happens there?
The American Rescue Act of 2000.
Ron Johnson objected to the motion to dispense with the reading. He objected. That means they have to read the bill. This bill is 600 and some odd pages long. So this is what's going on now.
Section 1001.
Actually, this was, about, I don't know how long ago, a half hour ago or so. Let's check in with the Senate now to hear what's happening.
Out of any money in the Treasury,
the Senate will be in order.
Otherwise appropriated, $6
billion. The clerk will continue reading.
Grants for rural health care.
Oh, hold on. I had two things going. This is what's happening on the Senate floor right now.
Production and purchases of vaccines, therapeutics, and
this will go on for hours and hours and hours. You know, what they should have done, nobody asked me, but if they had asked me, what I would have said is, Ron Johnson wants to force them to read every page of the bill into the record. Fine. Make every senator take a section and read it. Instead, the clerk is reading it. Nobody's paying attention. I would guess that if they turned the cameras around and, took notice of who's in the room, that probably nobody is there anymore. Except for the clerk, who has to sit there like an idiot and read the text of this bill out loud. This is because Ron Johnson wanted to slow it down. In fact, this is what Ron Johnson said just yesterday about his plan to slow down the bill.
I don't want to sound like a leftist, but I'm going to resist. Okay, so the first way I'm going to resist is I'm going to go down and object to the waiving of the reading of the bill. I will make them read their 600 to 700 page bill.
Okay, so that's what they're doing now. Gee, Ron Johnson, aren't you proud? Wisconsin, do something about Ron Johnson, please. This is nuts. All right, so that's going on. That's going to take a while. And then, then debate begins. And in the debate, they have we went through this a while ago, just not too long ago. The what do they call it? The Votorama. This thing is going to go all weekend long. They are going to keep going. And what's going to wind up happening, if they can keep Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema in line, the same way the vote went down for the cloture vote with Kamala Harris doing the tiebreaker, that's what's going to happen with this bill. Knocking on wood laminate here. So that's happening. The House, again, I mentioned they're gone today because who can blame them? There were threats again of some kind of insurrection at the Capitol. The House said, we're getting the hell out of Dodge. They finished their business yesterday, and yesterday they passed two bills. The For the People Act, that's HB1, which is the big voting rights and all that. If this thing is what we need, because, of course, the Republicans, again, are doing everything they can to try to destroy the Voting Rights Act, what's left of it, and our right to vote. So there's this assault on the electoral process going on all over the country. So the House passed that. And actually, let me see if I can't pull up the information that I have on this bill, the For the People Act, because this is great. This, and it was HB1, and it's also S1 in the Senate, the Senate's own bill. It is, let's see, what this includes is a slew of ballot access, campaign finance and ethics reforms that came under renewed scrutiny after 4 years of the Trump administration. The bill contains requirements that would weaken restrictive state voter ID laws that you know are only put into place to keep people from voting. Right. The legislation would mandate automatic voter registration and expand early and mail-in voting. Those are things that so many states are now trying to legislate out of existence. If passed by the Senate and signed by the president, this legislation, the For the People Act, would amount to the biggest expansion of federal voting protections since the 1960s. So we'll see. So that passed the House last night. And then before they got out of Dodge, they also passed the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act. And again, it's, you know, named after George Floyd, who, by the way, you know, he's the man who was killed by, in Minneapolis by police, most notably the guy named Derek Chauvin, who put his knee on George Floyd's neck for almost 10 minutes and killed him. And I'm, you know, aside from the fact that they passed this bill in the House yesterday, I bring it up because Monday, the murder trial of Derek Chauvin, the cop who killed George Floyd, begins. Now, because it's in Minneapolis, we have a friend in Minneapolis who happens to be a defense lawyer, Jack Rice. Many of you might remember him from our Air America days. A radio guy, really good radio guy, but he's also an attorney. And now he's back in Minneapolis practicing law again. So Jack is going to join us tomorrow. He lives, he said, something like 20 blocks away from where George Floyd died. So this is his neighborhood. This is his community. So Jack Rice will be sort of our correspondent for the murder trial of the killer of George Floyd. This bill, by the way, an expansive policing overhaul measure, obviously named for George Floyd. The vote, this was weird. The final tally here was 220 to 212. Actually, it was 219 to 211, but I'll get there. Two so-called Democrats, Jared Golden of Maine and Ron Kind of Wisconsin, voted against it. We'll talk to Howie Klein about this in a little while when he joins us. Now, one Republican, a guy named Lance Gooden of Texas, voted for it. Well, it turns out it was an oops moment. I guess Texas, there's something in the water. Soon after the vote, Gooden tweeted that he pressed the wrong button. He had meant to vote no, but he pressed the wrong button, so he voted yes. He said he would submit a correction to his vote. So it's actually 219 to 211. God, he couldn't make this stuff up. It's like the gang who couldn't shoot straight. But there was other news. There's news about Andrew Cuomo. Maybe if we have time, I'll get into it in a little while. But you know what's going on. I'll talk to Howie about it, too. Andrew Cuomo, you would think he would have learned from Joe Biden that you don't touch women that you don't have an intimate relationship with. You just don't do it. I get the age thing. So he's trying to blame his father. Well, it's what my dad did. Well, you know what? And I've said this time and time again. Andrew Cuomo, you are no Mario. I adored Mario Cuomo. I was just a young radio producer in New York, and I worked with Governor Cuomo at the time, Mario Cuomo at the time. And Andrew Cuomo shouldn't even be mentioned in the same breath. So let's say Andrew Cuomo almost sounded like he was going to cry yesterday. But he said he wouldn't resign. Now, I wasn't here yesterday, so I wasn't here to share the news that late Tuesday evening or early Tuesday evening, the news broke that Neera Tanden was no longer in contention to be a director of the Office of Management and Budget. And you know what? That's a good thing. I'll leave it there for now. Anyway, but the one other story that I worked on yesterday while I wasn't here was the story that's been troubling me, and we talked about this, the stage at CPAC. I know I'm like beating a dead horse here, but the fact of the matter is that the shape of the stage was it was a symbol it's known as the Ordal, I think the Odal rune. It's a Nordic symbol, but it was appropriated by the Nazis in World War II, and it was used as an insignia for the SS officers. I've seen that same shape appropriated by white supremacists. That people flew it on flags in Charlottesville. So yesterday morning, I awoke to a bunch of stuff on Twitter. There's a guy named Yasher Ali. I don't know what he does other than have a lot of Twitter followers. I don't know. But he tweeted something kind of rude, but you know, it is Twitter. Basically saying that that it turns out the people responsible for the design of the stage is a company called Design Foundry. They're based in Maryland. This is what they do. They do stage designs, and they've worked for both sides of the aisle. They've done events for MSNBC and Fox. They've done CPAC, and they've done, you know, other lefty organizations. Yasher Ali, and again, I can't vouch for him. I know nothing about him other than he has a big following on Twitter. He says, I know the person who owns the company. Her name is Annie, and she's a liberal, and she's mortified by this. Okay. Well, he refers to an article in the magazine, The Forward. The Forward is actually a Jewish publication. And the article that I saw that he referenced was written by a reporter named Jacob Kornbluh. And so I called Jacob Kornbluh. I did this. I know I was out sick yesterday, but I called him and spoke with him. And here's how our conversation went. On the line with me now is Jacob Kornbluh. You are a reporter or writer at The Forward, at forward.com. And I'm calling you because you seem to be the one who broke the story about who was responsible for the design of the stage at CPAC. Can I ask how you were put in contact with this company, Design Foundry? They're a firm based in Hyattsville, Maryland, who had no idea that this stage design resembled a symbol that was co-opted by the Nazis. How did you make the connection to this group, to this design firm?
Well, I got hold of the contract between Design Foundry and CPAC. And so I contacted Design Foundry whether they would share with us the reasons of why they chose this design and whether they feel that CPAC or themselves were responsible for what had happened afterwards. Obviously, you know, it became a controversy. Now, when I saw the design on Saturday after I'm observant, so after Sabbath, I opened up Twitter and I saw, wow, CPAC, this Nazi design and stage. And I couldn't bring myself to believe that any major organization, especially a conservative organization that espoused to be very influential within the Republican Party, would pick a design that resembles a Nazi image. So it didn't make sense at the start that this was intentional. But there's always the person behind the curtain. There's always who put together the stage and why was this design picked. And so I tried to figure out, number one, were there other alternatives? And this was a design that was picked because it was presented to them or not. So what CPAC told me was that they approved the design after given certain alternatives. And obviously they were told that this design would fit into a ballroom where social distancing rules were still in effect.
And on so many levels, that didn't happen. There was no social distancing taking place. But Jacob, I want to back up a second because you said you couldn't bring yourself to believe that an organization like the whatever they call themselves, the Conservatives Union, this is not the Republican Party, as an entity that runs CPAC. It's the American Conservatives Union, Union, I believe they're called, whatever that stands for. But have you not seen this very symbol used by people who call themselves Republicans and Trump supporters at other events that they've held?
Again, there's two things. You have to separate people's intentions of promoting hate and then somebody doing a major conference with some Jews on the stage.
Right, right.
And also politicians, senators, and the former president. Now, it's very easy to get, you know, all overwhelmed and saying, well, Trump, Charlottesville, tweeted that Star of David and everything. So you can believe when somebody says, well, Trump stepped on a stage that resembled Nazi images. But you also have to look back at what was their intention and whether CPAC did something to offend either the Jewish community or promote such hate. And there's no reason to believe
that
the Democratic Party and neither the Republican Party would intentionally promote such hate.
Right. There's no reason to believe the Democratic Party would. But from things I've seen from the Republican Party, absolutely. And I say this as a Jewish woman. I have been offended by things the Republican Party has done and as a Jewish person. And to say that you can't imagine they would do this, I have to wonder what you've been watching. I mean, do you watch Fox? Do you listen to the things that they say? Because this is right in line with, that's why I thought there's no way this can be a coincidence. Now, because of this design firm, a design foundry, they're saying, nope, this was our idea. I guess maybe it was a coincidence, but to say that you can't imagine that this group would put something forth like that, all you have to do is, you brought up Charlottesville, look at the signs they were carrying in Charlottesville. This very symbol was put on flags carried by these protesters, and I hate to use that word because they're anything but protesters. They were hate mongers.
Yeah, so again, that's what my job as a reporter is, to check the facts, okay? Mm-hmm. And so, yes, as a person of Jewish faith, obviously, I was very disturbed. Back in the campaign, when Trump tweeted that image of Hillary and the Star of David, and then doubled down during the campaign rally, where saying it was a sheriff's star, or the comments that he made, the retweet of white supremacists, the rally preceding the January 6th insurrection of the Capitol.
Yeah.
Everything said, you still have to believe that this was intentional. And that was my inquiry to CPAC to figure out who is responsible for that stage. Where did you get that design from? Who did that work? And once I figured that out, my work was to determine whether CPAC was, one, responsible for the design, and second, did they have the right to change that design once it became a controversy. And in both instances, it happens to be that this company, who has done work for MSNBC, for Target, for Google, said directly in the contract that they reserve all the rights of the design and the work, and they had no intention, even though CPAC approved the design, obviously, they claim, again, and that's why I have the spokesperson on the record. It's not sources, off the record or somebody tipping me off that this would be a good idea. It was my work done rightfully so, to determine whether this was intentional. And if, after my inquiries, I would determine that CPAC intentionally designed a stage that resembled Nazi image, obviously I was right about that.
Got it. No, I get that, and I appreciate it. My pushback was on you saying I can't believe that the Republican Party would do something like that, and that's what I find issue with, not the fact that they didn't, apparently, according to this. Now, your article, though, at Forward.com, doesn't quote anyone directly from Design Foundry. You just quote the company, Design Foundry, as an entity. Did you speak with anybody? I mean, on their website, nowhere can I find the names of any of the owners of this company, and certainly you didn't identify anybody by name in this piece. Was there a reason for that?
Well, the statement was given to me attributed to the company. So in journalistic terms, you have to abide by the rules when a company gives you a statement and attributes it to that company. That's how I quote them.
But,
and so everybody can look online who the CEO is.
No, that's not from their website.
Yesterday who the CEO is. He happens to know her. People happen to know her. And so you can always reach out to her and, get her to talk on the record.
No, again, I can't. I tried.
As long as they stated it. Right.
Right.
As long as they gave me a written statement stating the facts, all I had to do is get it out there to make sure that people know the facts. Now, everybody can, as it happens on every piece that I write, it's objective journalism where I present you the facts and you make up your own mind. And that's why I told you it is very easy to get carried away by what other people determine that was the intention. However, when you want readers to know the facts, all you have to do is do the groundwork and determine whether that was their intention. And so, yes, if you ask me if it's hard to believe, yes, it's very hard to believe as well that a member of Congress was elected who spouts anti-Semitic and conspiracy theories.
But it happens.
It's very hard to believe. But it happens to be that she's not afraid to say that in public. And the Republican Party has so far not expelled her from Congress.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But, so my initial reaction was, it is very hard to believe that this was intentional. However, if I had determined that this was intentional, obviously the condemnations would have kept on coming.
Right. No, and I understand that. And I appreciate you bringing this out. I just found it curious that on the Design Foundry website, I could not find the name of the CEO. The only way I've seen that it's a woman named Annie is because of a tweet from Yashar Ali. And when I tried to talk to him, he got very defensive and rude with me. And when I contacted the company and asked for an interview with Annie or even her full name, I was rebuffed. They sent me a written statement and said, we're not commenting any further on this. I just feel if there's nothing that they need to, be ashamed of or feel guilty about, then why the radio silence? And again, I don't know who the CEO is. I cannot go on their website and find out her name. I only know it's a her because of the name that was put in this tweet by this guy who's big on Twitter. It's just very fishy. It's all very weird. And, I'm Jewish by heritage. I'm not a religious person, but I took one look at this stage and I knew that was offensive. This company has been in business for how many years, and they're a design firm, and they don't see that this design they came up with has these Nazi correlations. It just doesn't sit well. But I appreciate your reporting and another article that I saw at Forward.com. This one written by, hold on, I want to get her name right. Mira Fox. She ends it perfectly. Mm-hmm. What she said is, this year, CPAC was careful to keep overt anti-Semitism and white nationalism out of the conference, canceling Young Pharaoh as a speaker for his anti-Semitic remarks. But the increasing anti-minority and white supremacist tilt of Trump's followers has been clear for a long time, even before the attack on the Capitol. But white supremacy doesn't have to be explicit to still be there. If nothing else, it seems like a fitting accident. So, you know, people can take it for what they will. I have a thing about coincidences. Maybe it's just me. There's something fishy here. Jacob, I appreciate your work and your reporting. I just think if this company was so forthcoming, they'd be a little more forthcoming.
Yeah, I do believe the onus is on the company to clarify how they came up with the design. But again, they took full responsibility, and therefore they should be able to answer all your inquiries. And if they are shying away from clarifying, they had some work to do to make sure that they hadn't done it intentionally. All I was inquiring was, who was responsible for the design, who approved it, and also who had the rights of to either cancel the design or dismantle the stage. And so, yes, we should, in politics, there's always left and right, there's always right and wrong, mm-hmm. and there's always conspiracies and facts. And these are the facts.
Well.
And those people who, believe in conspiracies, that's something that they have to work on themselves. But all I'm saying is, you have to look at coincidence, yes, but you also have to look at intention and also who's responsible. And when somebody takes responsibility, they should own it and answer for it.
I agree. I fully agree. Jacob Kornbluth, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate your reporting and your taking the time to talk with me. Thank you so much.
Good talking to you.
Okay, so that Jacob Kornbluth is a reporter, senior political reporter for The Forward. The Forward is a Jewish newspaper, a Jewish publication. It's interesting. I mean, here's what's odd. If this is the case, so the owner of this design foundry business steps up and says, we're responsible. It was our thing. When I had called, I had emailed them. They sent me a written statement along with artist renderings, allegedly, of the design in progress. I've got it all here. If you're interested, you can email me. I'll forward it to you. The thing is, it would the only publication that had the story was The Forward. Really? And nowhere in the story is this woman, whose name is allegedly Annie, and I only know that through Twitter, the owner, nowhere is her name mentioned. Nowhere on the Design Foundry's website is any principal, anybody's names. It's just a little too conveniently cryptic, right? There's still something fishy there. Tried to get to the bottom of it. I would like to say they're taking credit for it. Then why not be more forthcoming is my question. There's still something a little bit off there. And that's the best I could do for you. Sorry, wish I could tell you more, but there we go. And I look at the clock and we're late. Somebody, who's mixing up the Dirty Debbies today?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 oranges. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of Down With Tierney. On the Nicole Sandler Show.
Hello, Howie Klein.
Hey.
I did actually recognize that.
You know,
someone imitating?
No, no, that was him. So, Alan, hold on.
I'm on the phone with Alan Grayson.
I was just talking to Alan Grayson, and I held the phone up so he could hear the introduction with Chucky Schmucky.
Gotcha.
And he asked if that was someone imitating Chucky Schmucky or if that was actual really Chucky Schmucky.
That was actually really Chucky Schmucky.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Here, Alan, say that again so that Nicole could hear.
Very impressive, high production values.
Thank you. Congressman Alan Grayson, former Congressman Alan Grayson, on the phone there with Howie Klein. Look how it all comes together. So is Alan running again?
I'm trying to convince him, but it's not easy.
I'm going to drop off because I'm on an airplane. So nice to hear your voice again, Nicole.
Hi, Alan. Nice to hear yours, too. Fly safely.
Thanks.
Put your
Bye,
mask
Alan.
On. Okay. So.
Yeah. I'm constantly trying to talk him into running. But, he's doing well in life right now. And he has a lot of kids.
Yeah.
He's been spending a lot of time with them, and he's loving it.
Oh, good. Well, that's always something worth doing. And I'll tell you, the way politics are these days, I'd stay a million miles away from it. Look, if I had my choice of things that I could do to earn a living right now, talking about politics or being in politics wouldn't be it. Because this is just opposite world crap. The stuff that's going on it's so juvenile, first of all, seeing how these idiots, Ron Johnson, what he did today, having them read the bill out loud. I mean, what is his problem?
Yeah, I mean, the Republican Party, you get someone like Rubio and Hawley, they're talking about how the future of the Republican Party is with the working class. You know, we have to be a working class party. And there has been some switch from, suburbanites who used to be Democrats becoming, Republican voters. Becoming Democratic voters.
Right.
While working class people, 40% of union households, for example, went for Trump. So there is some kind of something to what they're saying. But then you get a clown like Ron Johnson. What is he doing? He's stalling everybody's check.
Yeah, exactly. He's holding up everybody's money.
Check. He's a multimillionaire. He doesn't understand that.
Wow. Yep.
He's not going to stop anybody's check. He's just going to stall it. And people are getting angry.
As they should. And what makes it even more it's like twisting the knife is when you realize he's got Russ Feingold's seat. Russ Feingold was a wonderful senator. He was a real progressive. He was what Wisconsin was. And Ron Johnson, of all people, it just is a travesty.
Yep. Ron Johnson did one thing in his life. He married a very, very wealthy family and took over their business and became a very, very rich man. He had nothing.
Wow. Wow.
He never did anything except marry well and manipulate himself into a position where he had all the money in the world. He ran two Senate campaigns that he paid for with the family's money.
Lovely. And that seems to happen a lot. And it actually happens on both sides of the aisle, but I think more frequently for the Republicans. But I could be wrong on that one.
maybe you're right, but it does happen very much on both sides of the aisle. There are lots and lots of like horrible Democrats who do the same thing.
Yep.
Some of whom lose their races and some of whom who win their races.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
Same with the Republicans. I mean, this woman in Texas the last two elections in 18 and in 20 spent. I don't have the figures in front of me right now, but something like over $10 million on these two races, over $10 million,
wow.
And she lost both times.
Wow. Yeah, sometimes, all the money in the world isn't going to dig you out of the polling hole that you might be in. But there's also no rhyme or reason. Look, it's for somebody like, just to pull out a name of someone who's been in the news lately, Madison Cawthorn, to win a congressional seat is just insane. This guy is He is a twerp. He was getting like straight D's at whatever Liberty University kind of school he went. It wasn't Liberty, but it was one of those kind of colleges.
No, it was even a lesser version of Liberty, as a matter of fact.
Okay. He couldn't get into Liberty, so he was at a different Bible-y college, if you can call it that. And he was pulling straight D's and had to drop out. This is a guy who's done nothing constructive yet because he's a Republican in North Carolina and Trump, you know, supported him. He's in Congress.
No, Trump
didn't support him.
In the primary, there was an establishment Republican,
yeah.
Real estate agent, woman.
Right.
And Trump endorsed her, not Cawthorn. And then Cawthorn won anyway.
Wow.
And after he won, then Trump, supported him against a really, really interesting Democrat
right.
who was running.
Mo Davis.
And you know, the thing is, it may not be in the future, in the near future, but right now it's a very gerrymandered Republican district, and a Democrat can't win that district.
Right.
Now, maybe against Cawthorn. Possible, because he's so extreme and he's done such a terrible job.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, that is a very Republican seat. It's got a big blue area in it, so Democrats always feel like they've got a chance because they know they're going to win in Asheville.
Uh-huh.
But once you get out of Asheville, there's more voters outside, and they go for Republicans by huge margins.
It's crazy.
And that's what the problem is.
That is crazy. And in fact, I saw an article somewhere in my reading travels today where Mo Davis said that the chances of him running again are slim to none, that he really has had enough of the death threats and that he values his life too much. This is what it's come to. Mo Davis is an interesting man. He was like the head lawyer at Guantanamo Bay for a long time. He's a military guy. I mean, he's the kind of guy that Republicans should have gone for. And he had a very centrist message to try to appeal to all of them. I really like the guy. And I'm amazed that he lost by so much. And he even said, there's no way I can overcome that margin in this district the way it's drawn.
Right, but it's going to be redrawn. He is very interested in running again. They don't call it a campaign, but he has a campaign now. A campaign staff that,
yep.
that does stuff for him. So I wouldn't be too surprised if he does run. Now there's a woman who just declared she's running, I think she's still a reverend. She's an active Democratic activist. She's very, 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 very progressive. I mean, on a different planet from Mo Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And he, as you said, he is a centrist. And she's a super progressive.
Oh, okay.
That would be an interesting primary as well.
Yes, it would. Well, yeah, hopefully. I mean, this matters. And the thing is, the Republican Party of North Carolina censures Senator Burr because he voted for impeachment. And he's not running for re-election now, but they say nothing about Caulfield, who now all these women are coming forward and talking about the horrible sexual abuse or advances that he made on them. And he was a real slime ball when he was in college flunking out. I mean, everything about this man is reprehensible, but he's fine as far as the North Carolina Republican Party is concerned, apparently.
And they don't, there's a big freak out among people, right, among Democrats right now, among everybody in New York about Andrew Cuomo.
Yes.
About his
right.
behavior.
Right.
Now, at the same time, you've got Ronnie Johnson in Texas.
Jackson, isn't it? Ronnie Jackson. Dr. Jackson. Right.
Congressman from
yep.
the most Republican district in the country. The Amarillo district.
Yeah.
And he's got a record as at least as bad as Cuomo's, and they don't say anything. You got Caulfield.
Yep.
And he's also no one is saying that about Cuomo that he like tried to, you know, put his hand under someone's
dress or anything.
Blouse,
right.
But they are saying that about Caulfield.
Yes. Cawthorn. I did the same thing.
Yes.
Caulfield is the Catcher in the Rye kid.
Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah. It's understandable. But yeah, so Mario, Andrew Cuomo is, I know. Andrew Cuomo is fighting back tears yesterday. I swear, I thought he was going to cry. And all I can think is, he's throwing his father under the bus, saying, well, this is how my dad used to do it. He would hug and kiss people. And I want to say, that was 30, 40 years ago, and you are not Mario Cuomo. I really loved Mario Cuomo.
I knew it was Mario Cuomo. I don't think he'd be having this problem right now.
No, not at all. Ugh. So all that's going on. And but, you know, look, I'm not excusing Andrew Cuomo. He should know better. He should. And if he didn't, with all the stuff that went on with Joe Biden and the touchy feely stuff, he should have learned something. He should know better. Right. But the way everyone saw all, you know, hair on fire. Donald Trump has rape charges against him by numerous women. He's admitted on tape grabbing women by the pussy. Kiss them. I can do whatever I want because I'm famous. And they're talking about Andrew Cuomo. I hate the whataboutism, but seriously.
Democrats care about these things and Republicans don't.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Right.
You know, that's why Cawthorn and Trump. And
Ronnie Jackson.
Ronnie Jackson.
Yes.
Right. That's why they don't get in trouble for it.
Yeah.
No one cares in the Republican Party.
Right.
I mean, he's got an R+80 district. It's like so red. They literally, the Democrats, you know, a Democrat is considered really, really successful if they get over 20% of the vote there.
Right.
Which they rarely do.
But, you know, the thing with Ronnie Jackson, so this Department of Defense Inspector General report comes out yesterday, and it's like 80 pages long of stuff about Dr. Jackson, who was doing this shit while he was the White House doctor, not just for Donald Trump, but for Barack Obama, too. How did Obama not know that he was this flaky, weird, creepy guy?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Right. This is the personal physician to the president of the United States who was taking Ambien while he was on duty. And then there were the other stories that we heard actually while he was still there when he was on his way out on Air Force One. They called him the Candyman because he would walk up and down the aisles dispensing Ambien for those who wanted to sleep. And Provigil and New Vigil for those who wanted to stay awake. I just don't know how he was in the White House for so long as Obama's doctor and there were no red flags raised.
Well, I don't know that he was doing that stuff when Obama was
apparently
president.
Apparently he was.
I haven't heard anyone. I mean, maybe they have, but I haven't heard anybody accuse him of that. I mean, this stuff that you just described, wasn't that more recently when he was Trump's doctor?
I could be wrong. I thought it went back to the Obama days. The thing is, it's the same guy. I mean, how much could he have changed with the transition to the Trump administration? I mean, did
he was also George W. Bush's White House physician.
Wow.
And I don't think he has changed. I'm not saying that.
Did he
do those specific things on Air Force One when Obama was president? That would be hard to imagine that Obama would ever tolerate that.
I know, but apparently people knew of this behavior. It wasn't a secret. So I don't know. I would like to see, and I haven't read that 80-page long Department of Defense Inspector General's report, but I think it's something that maybe this weekend I'm going to have to look into because there's more there. And now this guy's in Congress. It gets weirder and weirder.
Not just in Congress, but in Congress for life.
Yeah, because of the district.
I'm telling you, I think if I remember correctly, I wrote about this, and I think Biden got 19% of the vote.
Yeah. Yeah.
19% against Donald Trump. That's how red this district is.
Oy. Oh, my God. And of course, you have my old friend Alan West as the Republican Party chairman in Texas. God. So that Inspector General's report came from the Department of Defense. Well, last night, another Inspector General's report was released, this time from the Department of Transportation. And gee, the target was Elaine Chao, former Secretary of Transportation under Donald Trump, also known as Mrs. Mitch McConnell. And this report is damning. Oh, boy. Mrs. McConnell seems to be in a lot of trouble.
Well, we'll see if she's in trouble. So far, the Justice Department, although it was the Trump Justice Department, said there's nothing there, and they declined to prosecute her or to even investigate any further. Now we'll see if this is something that, if we ever wind up getting an attorney general, if the new Justice Department wants to do it. I mean, the Republicans are doing everything they can to prevent Merrick Garland from even getting a hearing. I mean, they're up to their old tricks again.
Yep. Yeah, some things never, never change. This is amazing.
I mean, this guy is so moderate.
I know.
He's so not anything like what the way they're trying to paint him. It's just amazing. I mean, to me, I don't want to see him as attorney general. I think he's too conservative.
Right, right, right. Well, but
the latest thing was, I'm trying to remember which Republican is doing this. But one of them put up, some kind of an objection, which is going to delay the process for another week or two.
Yep. No, I saw that, too. And I can't remember who it was either because I was so fixated on Ron Johnson. I wanted to say it was him. But it's one of, it's one of those.
It may have been him.
It may have been him. And that's why I'm having trouble pulling it out. But so that's going on. And the charges against her, just for people who don't know, four kinds of ethics violations, including planning to bring her relatives on an official trip to China and requiring the Department of Transportation's public affairs staff to help market a book that her dad wrote. She, had employees doing personal errands. That happens all the time. But the fact that her family is Chinese and she was bringing her family over there to for the business to get favors from the Chinese government because she was the Secretary of Transportation. Obviously, this is bad shit, but it's the kind of stuff Trump did. So he probably said, go for it. I'm hoping more of this stuff will come out.
I'm sure it will.
Yep.
And it's not just that her family is living in and they're from China. It's not just that. They are billionaires.
Yes.
Who have one of the Chinese shipping companies in the world.
Right.
And they have also financed Mitch McConnell's political career.
Wow.
So what do you think?
Another one who married well and used the wife's money to finance his political career. Howie, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about this. So the House, obviously, House is out today because they were afraid of another group of Trump's insurrectionists coming to, lay siege on the Capitol. But yesterday they passed two bills. One was the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act, and it went straight down party lines, except two Democrats voted against it. They were one of the old suspects, Jared Golden of Maine and Ron Kind of Wisconsin. What the hell?
Okay, so good you asked. Ron Kind, who was at one time the head of the New Dems and is extremely conservative and feels that his district is going in the wrong direction. So he responds to the right. This is the kind of thing that he feels he can convince Democrats to ignore. Most of the Democrats in his district are white. He doesn't have a big black population
right.
where he is. And he wants, the problem for him, I think, is he wants to run for the U.S. Senate against Ron Johnson. The idea being, it'll be a lesser of two evils. You want Ron Johnson? Of course not. So vote for me. That's what he's hoping. But, you can't win in a state like Wisconsin without African-American support and enthusiasm.
Sure.
How he's going to get that after voting no is something beyond me. But he's terrible. And we all would be a lot better off if he wasn't a member of Congress.
Right. Oh, absolutely. I hear you. OK. And then Jared Golden, we know he lied to you when you were vetting him when he was running and pretended to be a progressive.
Months over and over and over again. I talked to him at least a dozen times on the phone.
Wow.
At least.
Wow.
And he just, really. But I think he was lying to himself. He was trying to convince me and himself that he is a progressive.
Wow.
And he ran as a progressive. I helped to persuade the Congressional Progressive Caucus to back him, which they did. They spent money on his campaign.
Oh, God.
And then he gets elected. He goes to one meeting of the Progressive Caucus, as far as I can tell, one meeting, and makes the decision, you know what, I've been wrong all this time. I'm actually a Blue Dog, and immediately joins the Blue Dog Caucus.
I remember when it happened, because I think I even had him on the show, maybe, to, you know, interview him when he was running. This talk about a flip-flop. I mean, this is a guy who went from one extreme to the other. Wow.
Now we're looking for someone to run against him in the primary.
Okay, anybody in Maine who wants to step up, now's your chance, because this guy needs to go.
But not people in Portland. You know, it's the other district.
Trump
district.
Oh, gotcha. Oh, there's two districts in Maine, right.
People in Lewiston.
Gotcha. Okay, then, of course, there was one Republican vote in favor of the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act, but that was Lance Gooden of Texas, who pressed the wrong button. He said, oops.
Right. I was going to say, you know, when I saw it was Lance Gooden, I thought to before I read his tweet, I thought to myself, Lance Gooden must have been reading the thing wrong and thought he was voting for the KKK or something. I mean, this guy is an outright racist and a total Trumper.
Right.
And for him to vote for this is absurd. I mean, there was no possibility. And then it turned out he pressed the wrong button.
Right. You know, the other piece of legislation.
Not a button, by the way.
Right.
You have to put your card in it.
Right. And he did the wrong thing. All I could think is Texas and Rick Perry and oops. I guess the apple didn't fall too far from the tree. But then they also passed the For the People Act, which was huge. This is, you know, that's what it doesn't make sense with the other vote, because, again, this was almost unanimous. Every Democrat voted for it except for Benny Thompson of Mississippi.
And right. We have to find out why.
He raised concerns that the independent redistricting mandate could mean the elimination of some majority minority districts in Republican states. That was his reason for voting no.
Right. There are a lot of, Benny, what happens in these states, like let's just take, for example, Alabama and Mississippi. Mm-hmm. So they draw a district where all of the African Americans in the state, or as many as they can possibly do, all wind up in one district.
Right.
And that's Benny Thompson's district. It just goes all over the state, reaching out to African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they draw the district. He never has to ever even think about raising any money or at all, because he has got a district that's 100% safe. And it's not just Benny Thompson. I'm not picking on him.
Right.
It's the same thing with Terry Sewell in Alabama. But there are a lot of states that have this, where they have Republican majorities in the state house who draw these districts that are, you know, they get as many blacks into one district, and then they ignore the fact that they've got a big black population, because they're all in one district. Same thing in South Carolina. You know, where Clyburn has a district like that. And the districts make no sense except under this rule. And you know what? The rule sucks. They don't need 80% districts. It's not fair.
No.
Because that means that no Democrat is ever going to win in the other district.
Yeah. Well, we need to do away with gerrymandering.
Politicians who, along with Republicans, who insist on this.
Yep.
And it's just pure greed.
Yeah. No. Something's got to be done about gerrymandering, and that's why it's so horrible that the Democrats really fucked up this last election. That we did so poorly in House races and in state assembly races and things like that, because this is what we need. This is where we needed to win, and we didn't. I mean, it's great that the Democrats won back the White House, but everything else sucks. One last thing.
It'll get worse.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to gerrymander again now,
yep.
And it's going to be a lot worse than it was when we already lost.
Yeah, I hear you.
So I have like very, very big fears about what's going to happen next.
As do I. As do I. And Howie, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring it up because the news broke Tuesday evening as we were just sitting down to dinner. Too bad. Neera Tanden is no longer in contention to be the director of the Office of Management and Budget. But my goodness, Twitter today is really ugly because you would think it was 2016 all over again. And the, quote, Hill bots are all out for the Bernie bros. Oh, my God. I couldn't believe the stuff I'm reading today.
Tell me.
Well, they're blaming. Oh, this is Bernie. I bet all the Bernie bros are happy now. Like, shut up. First of all, Bernie Sanders would have voted for her. It wasn't up to him. It was Joe Manchin. And since Joe Manchin didn't vote, Bernie, you know, if his vote was necessary to confirm her, I'm sure he would have done it because he's in this team playing mode. But of course, you know, all the Clintonistas are pissed off. It's all Bernie's doing. Oh, they got rid of Neera Tanden. How horrible of them. Yeah, screw you. We're better off.
You know, I'm more interested in another side of this story, which is why did so many progressive organizations, even Justice Democrats, back her?
I don't know.
What happened there? I mean, I've been meaning to ask them what that's all about. But, you know, a lot of usually trustworthy Democratic or progressive organizations were in favor of her. And it made no sense to me. I couldn't see it.
Yeah, I don't get it either. I don't.
Some of my friends as well, by the way.
What's that?
Some of my friends backed her as well. It was just so strange to me. She's a very anti-progressive person.
Yeah.
Why were people backing her?
I have no idea.
They should be celebrating. I mean, she got,
I did.
She lost the the nomination for the wrong reasons.
Yep.
I think.
Yep.
But, you know, hey, good to see her go.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt. So, and the woman who is now being considered, they haven't nominated her yet. I think they're giving it a reasonable, you know, respectable mourning period. But she was nominated to be the deputy director. I forget her name, but she looks great. And apparently she's got good support on both sides. She'll probably be confirmed easily. And she's a woman of color. She's a black woman. Yep.
Everybody wants her.
Yep.
But, you know, they like to say that Neera Tanden, you know, didn't win because people didn't want a woman of color.
Bullshit. Well, had nothing to do with that.
Also.
That's right.
And she happens to be someone who's considered a better candidate.
Yep. I agree. Sometimes things work out the way they're supposed to. Not always, but sometimes. Howie Klein, always a pleasure. Next week, who is this that's going to join us next? Oh, we can't talk about it yet because it hasn't been announced yet. Next week, we have a new candidate, right? Joining us?
A candidate for the U.S. Senate.
Awesome. Who is announcing her campaign this weekend. So we'll leave it at that. Howie Klein, as always, find him at downwithtyranny.com. And, of course, support the Blue America PAC because they support great progressive candidates, the ones kinds we need in office. Thank you, Howie.
Thank you, Nicole.
Okay. Talk to you later. Bye-bye. All right. With that, we're done. I'm a little late. What else is new? Thank you for listening. Thanks for bearing with me yesterday. I just needed a day. It happens sometimes. All right. I'll be back tomorrow. We're going to be joined by Jack Rice, and we're going to talk about what's happening in Minneapolis next week. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great night. Take care. Wear your mask. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The House of Representatives is not in session on Thursday. Instead, they adjourned Wednesday night due to a warning by security officials that an unnamed militant group was plotting to breach the Capitol. Sound familiar? Right-wing extremists reportedly had been circulating credible threats of violence timed to what they call, quote, true inauguration day, March 4th. when they believe that former President Donald Trump, who lost the November election to President Biden, will be sworn in for a second term. The House Sergeant at Arms, Timothy Blodgett, said in a memo to lawmakers that the Capitol Police, quote, had enhanced their security posture to counter the threat. Authorities also reportedly have extended the assignment of a special security detail for the House's Democratic impeachment managers, the members who argued the case against Trump for incitement of insurrection. Congressman Michael McCaul, the top Republican on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, says Donald Trump has a duty to call off any supporters planning action on Thursday. Yeah, that's unlikely to happen. Even more so, as we're now learning about how things actually unfolded on January 6th. 3 hours and 19 minutes. 3 hours and 19 minutes. That's how long it took the Pentagon to agree to dispatch troops to help overwhelmed Capitol Police overrun by the violent pro-Trump mob. On Wednesday, in a Senate hearing on the events of January 6th, we heard astounding testimony from the commanding general of the D.C. National Guard. Major General William Walker gave the details that his first call for backup was made at 1:49 in the afternoon, but he didn't get approval until 5:08 p.m. Yep. 3 hours and 19 minutes later.
Of as many available National Guardsmen that I could muster. Immediately after that 1:49 call, I alerted the U.S. Army senior leadership of the request. The approval for Chief Sun's request would eventually come from the Acting Secretary of Defense and be relayed to me by Army senior leaders at 5:08 p.m., about 3 hours and 19 minutes later. I had already had guardsmen on buses at the armory ready to move to the Capitol. The Secretary of the Army's January 5th letter to me withheld that authority for me to employ a quick reaction force. I found that requirement to be unusual. I have 39 years in the National Guard. I was in the Florida Guard, Hurricane Andrew. I've been involved in civil disturbances. So I believe that number could have made a difference. We could have helped extend the perimeter and help push back the crowd.
Despite a lot of testimony so far, there's been a complete absence of any explanation as to why the Department of Defense refused to send help for over 3 hours.
They got back to me saying, and that was on the phone call with District of Columbia senior leaders, that it wouldn't be their best military advice to send uniformed guardsmen to the Capitol, because they didn't like the optics. And they had also said that they thought it could inflame.
No, optics is not a reasonable explanation. Still likely suffering from some post-traumatic stress, the House finished up their business Wednesday night to flee the Capitol so as not to be there should another attack be staged. But before they left, they passed some key legislation. The For the People Act, a top legislative priority for both chambers of Congress, the bill includes a slew of ballot access, campaign finance, and ethics reforms that came under renewed scrutiny after 4 years of Trump. The law contains provisions that would weaken restrictive state voter ID laws that critics say unfairly burden some minority and immigrant voters. It would mandate automatic voter registration and expand early and mail-in voting. If passed by the Senate and signed by the president, the legislation would amount to the biggest expansion of federal voting protections since the 1960s. This as Democrats counter efforts by Republican-controlled statehouses to impose new voting restrictions. Of course, all the Republicans voted against the bill, as did one Democrat. Congressman Benny Thompson of Mississippi voted no, raising concerns that the independent redistricting mandate would mean the elimination of some majority-minority districts in Republican states. And of course, opposition by Republicans appears certain to stall the bill in the Senate, where Democrats do not have the 60 votes needed to beat a Republican filibuster. The House on Wednesday also passed another measure, the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. It's a huge policing overhaul measure named for the 46-year-old black man who died last Memorial Day after a Minneapolis police officer held his knee on Floyd's neck for almost 10 minutes. By the way, that police officer, Derek Chauvin, goes on trial in Minneapolis for murder on Monday. But back to the bill. The final vote tally was 220 to 212 along party lines. But two Democrats, Jared Golden of Maine and Ron Kind of Wisconsin, voted against it. There was one Republican vote in favor of the legislation. Representative Lance Gooden of Texas accidentally hit the wrong button. After the vote, Gooden tweeted that he had pressed the wrong button and had meant to vote no. He said he would submit a correction to his vote. Okay. Despite the House adjourning early out of an overabundance of caution, the Senate, aware of the warnings, remains in session on Thursday. Democrats were still scrambling Wednesday night to put their final touches on the $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief bill that the entire caucus will have to support. President Biden on Wednesday agreed to a compromise with moderate Democrats to narrow the income eligibility for the next round of $1,400 stimulus checks. The new proposal will completely cut off families that earn more than $160,000 a year and individuals who earn more than $80,000 a year. Still, you know, Republicans will be Republicans, and they are threatening to slow the whole thing down again. Ron Johnson of Wisconsin has said he will force the bill to be read aloud by Senate clerks. That reading alone could take 10 hours.
I don't want to sound like a leftist, but I'm going to resist. Okay, so the first way I'm going to resist is I'm going to go down and object to the waiving of the reading of the bill. I will make them read their 600 to 700-page bill.
Hey, Wisconsin voters, do something about Ron Johnson, please. So this happened on Wednesday.
I think it's a big mistake. These masks make a difference. The last thing we need is the Neanderthal thinking that in the meantime, everything's fine. Take off your mask. Forget it. It still matters. It's critical, 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 critical that they follow the science.
Neanderthal thinking. That's what President Biden called the decision by Texas Governor Greg Abbott and the others who followed his lead in reopening everything in the state at 100% and rescinding the mask mandate. Dr. Anthony Fauci called the decision inexplicable. So yesterday, we got an inspector general's report alerting us to some behavior by former White House physician Dr. Ronny Jackson. Now comes another newly released report, this one from the Department of Transportation Inspector General's files, and it aims squarely at former Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao. You might also know Ms. Chao as Mrs. Mitch McConnell. The report cited Chao for four kinds of ethics violations, including planning to bring relatives on an official trip to China and requiring DOT's public affairs staff to help market a book that her father wrote. It also found she had employees handling personal errands such as shipping Christmas ornaments. Some of the inspector general's conclusions back up reporting by Politico and the New York Times on the deep entanglement of Chao's family with her work at the agency. Investigators from the IG's office referred their findings to the Justice Department U.S. Attorney's Office and its public integrity section in December, but both offices declined to open criminal investigations. Stay tuned. And sounding as if he were on the verge of tears, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo on Wednesday did something New Yorkers have rarely, if ever, seen before. He apologized.
I now understand that I acted in a way that made people feel uncomfortable. It was unintentional, and I truly and deeply apologize for it. I feel awful about it, and frankly, I am embarrassed by it.
In his remarks on Wednesday, Mr. Cuomo sought to differentiate his conduct from some more abhorrent behavior that has emerged in the Me Too movement, insisting twice that he never, quote, touched anyone inappropriately. Okay. Well, New York's Attorney General Letitia James is leading a new investigation. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.